This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
One of the deans of SEC play-by-play men joining us now on the Mick Ultra Pure Gold Hotline. He is the voice of the Gators, Mick Hubert. Mick, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me on today, and looking forward for the opening of a new season.
It's a new season. You've seen a lot of seasons, starting there in 1989 in Gainesville. We were talking about it. I don't know if there's another play-by-play guy in the country that has been able to call as many national championship games and championships overall as you have with baseball, basketball, and football there at Florida.
No, I've been very blessed to do that. I mean, gosh, to be really doing what I've always wanted to do since I was 7 or 8 years old, get paid for it, go watch a game, and be associated with a program that has a history of success, and be in those positions to see those national championships in football, basketball, and baseball. Yeah, it's been a pretty good deal so far, and I'm looking forward to this being my 31st year here, so I've been very blessed.
Mick, we are anticipating this game as much as you are, but we are concerned about the Florida offensive line. Obviously, Nick Buchanan and Brent Heggie have taken meaningful snaps, but there are three spots that we just flat out don't know enough about. I have confidence in John Hevesy, the offensive line coach, but how concerned are you, and how much concern have you heard out of Florida camp about that lack of experience up front for the Gators heading into this matchup with Miami?
Well, I kind of feel the way you do, and, you know, I mean, I have a lot of faith in John Hevesy, and, you know, he's been with Dan Mullen a long time, he and Billy Gonzalez, so they have the coaching continuity, and our offensive line, you know, wasn't all that super at the beginning of last year, and they got better as they went along. I think they were coachable, and I think this group is coachable, and I don't necessarily think it's coach speak, but I haven't heard anything from the coaching staff to think that they're concerned. Now, you know, coaches are always concerned. You don't misunderstand that, but I think they feel, hey, they've got talent, and they're coachable, and we can teach them. So I think they feel they'll be okay. You know, Steve Spurrier was always one that said, you know, we don't need a line that holds for 5 or 6 seconds. You know, give us a standoff for a couple of seconds, we can get a play called. And I think Dan's kind of that way. I think we won a couple of games last year by Dan's play calling. And that helped Felipe Franks build his confidence a little bit. So, you know, that is the question mark for this team, because I think they have experience and some depth at quarterback, and they certainly have experience and depth at running back, and they got a boatload of receivers who are qualified. So it's that offensive line that would be a question mark. But as you mentioned, Nick Buchanan and Brett Hagee, they do have some experience. At left tackle, Stone Forsythe is going to make his second career start tomorrow. He had one start last year. Chris Bleich is playing at right guard, got in 4 games last year, did not start. And then the John DeLance is a transfer from Texas, a redshirt junior. So he'll make his first Gator start tomorrow at right tackle. So, and they've got a couple of other guys that are younger that they feel pretty confident about. I don't know if they're confident in 10 or 11 guys, but I think they feel they get 6 or 7 right now ready to go, and we'll see how it plays out.
Mick, Dan Mullen obviously done tremendous work with quarterbacks in the past. What are you expecting from Felipe Franks in his second year working with Dan?
Well, I think if you look at last year, Felipe did get better as the season went along. I mean, Florida won those last 4 games, and 3 of them by, I think, 26 points or more. And he had 8 TDs and no picks in the last month. So, I credit Felipe for his hard work, but I also credit the coaching staff. I think this staff coached them up so much better than the previous staff did. And I think Dan knows that, hey, his quarterback has limitations. But don't keep asking a guy that can't do something to go out there and do it time and time again. It no longer becomes the player's fault. It becomes the coach's fault. Not coaching him very well. So I think Dan minimized the playbook and put Franks in positions to have a little success. And as he got success, he got a little bit more confident. And I think they probably gave him a few more pages in the playbook this year. He also understands that Emory Jones is a guy that's got a package of plays that might it surprised me if he plays tomorrow also. Emory Jones was the true freshman who got in those, you know, those minimum 4 games that you could play last year and still get that redshirt back, and he did that. So I think they feel good in Emory Jones. But as far as Franks goes, I think just an understanding of the offense, and everybody knows he's got arm talent. He can throw it 75 yards, but how many times you're asked to do that? I think what Dan says, hey, on 3rd and 7, can you make the right call? And that might be a check down for 8 yards. I'd rather have a, you know, an 8 yard completion on 3rd and 7 than you trying to think you hit something down the middle, gets picked off or goes incomplete. So I think just that understanding and being able to move the chains and do that will make Felipe Franks a better quarterback. And I think, you know, he's shown an ability to run willing, and that's all Dan has said. I just want my quarterback to be a willing runner. Not that he's going to be the tailback, not that he's going to carry 25 times a game. That's not what we're trying to do. But just be a willing runner and take it when it's there for you. And if it means you get 6 yards, that's great. I mean, most 6 yard gains are pretty well taken, unless it's 3rd and 8.
Mick Hubert, voice of the Florida Gators, joining us here on Three Man Front on the Mick Ultra Pure Gold Hotline. Mick, as I said, you've covered a lot of coaches, worked with a lot of coaches there in Gainesville in your tenure since 1989 with Florida football, basketball, and baseball. Dan Mullen, I know you got to know him when he was an offensive coordinator there and a quarterback's coach, but what sets him apart from the other head coaches in Florida football history that you've worked with?
You know, a lot of people will hear this and go, oh, boy, just what I thought. But he's got just a little bit of Steve Spurrier in him, and I say that in all complimentary reasons. He's got that confidence, a little swagger to him. He's also a student. I think he understands that, you know, if there's help available, I need to seek it out. I'm not sure the previous staff took advantage of maybe Steve Spurrier being around. You know, he is the ambassador to the program, so he's not on the field coaching, but he's certainly available. If you got a question, you know, why would you not listen to that guy? So I think Dan has used that as an example of other coaches and continually learning it and how he can do it. And he's an offensive guy that, you know, wants to score points. And, you know, and who doesn't? But I think Dan has a confidence, and he certainly has a love for the University of Florida. He had, you know, he had 4 good years here. I mean, Urban Meyer was here for 6, and then Dan left after the 4th year to go to Mississippi State. But in the 4 years he was here, you know, with Tim Tebow and Percy Harvin and all those guys, they won 2 national championships. So he came back and realized he knew where the skeletons were in the closet here, but he also knew what makes Gator Nation tick, and he knew the state of Florida, and he certainly knew the SEC. Here's a thing that people don't realize. Dan Mullen had more head coaching experience when he was hired as the coach of the Gators than any previous Florida head coach in history. All 9 of his years as a head coach had been spent in this league. So he knew the Western Division, he knew the Eastern Division. Like I say, he knew Florida, he knew the state. He knew what he had to do, where to go to get players and those kinds of things. And that gave him a real head start running, because he did a heck of a job. He and his coaching staff last year, they inherited a program that was, you know, it was kind of a train wreck. I mean, when you go 4 wins the previous year and then a surprising 10-win season, I got to give Dan credit for a couple of those, like I said, for some play calling and those kinds of things. I mean, shoot, 2 years ago, we lost 2 games back-to-back weeks by 3 total points, to LSU and Texas A&M. Well, we don't lose those games last year. We didn't play A&M, but we beat LSU, and we probably would have beat A&M. So, I mean, you know, when you lose back-to-back weeks, as we did in 2017, by a total of 3 points, and see, that's kind of why we went 4-7. And then last year, they go, you know, 10-3, and finish strong and beat Michigan, and first time we'd ever beat Michigan in school history, and beat them really kind of running away in that Peach Bowl. We beat them 41-15, and very honestly, if we played a fifth quarter, we might have beat them 55-15. You know, it was going that direction. So that's the two-edged sword. That gives Florida confidence and raises the stakes. But Dan has embraced that. He said, hey, we should have high expectations here. That doesn't mean we're going to win a championship, but we expect to be in that conversation. I think one of the things Dan had to do was kind of restore the standard that he knew had been here before when he was with Urban and prior to that with Steve. So I think he had a real selling job, but the thing that helped was that his players bought in really early. And that's, you know, we play a team tomorrow in Miami. It's got a first-year coach, and one of the things that Manny Diaz will have to hope for is he'll get a quick buy-in from his players, because, it you know, if it doesn't get that quick buy-in, it could be a tough first season. A lot of first-year coaches find that out.
Mick, when you look at this Florida-Miami rivalry, you just mentioned 31 years you've been calling these games. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to Florida football fans?
Well, I just know, again, like I said, I've been so blessed because by the time I was 7 or 8 years old, this is what I wanted to do in life. I mean, I always say, hey, look, it's not brain surgery. You know, I didn't grow up wanting to be an astrophysicist and a rocket scientist and a brain surgeon and all this. I just wanted to go to games and be paid to call and do games. And I get to do that really collegiately at the highest level in the Southeastern Conference. And I enjoy this. I love my preparation Monday through Friday because when I get in football season, when I get to Saturday, I can be a fan. I can sit back and enjoy the game because I know I put the time in to prepare and watch tape and do those things, and I like that. And I think there are sometimes a lot of announcers that don't necessarily do a whole lot of that. They do okay on Saturday. They got a little bit of a natural ability, but I think how much better would you be if you just would have studied and put yourself to task a little bit? Because everything I study comes back to me. What I'm studying for this game this week, I probably won't use all of it tomorrow. That's okay. But it might come along, and I'll need some of this second, third, or fourth week of the season. That's all right. So it's always an investment in yourself. And like people over the years say, Mick, can I help you? I said, no, you really can't, because whatever you do, I'd have to learn what you did. And so I might as well do it myself. But I enjoy that, and I think that's having the continuity to do that all these years and span all these coaches. And most of these coaches have taken me in under their wing and said, come on in, let me teach you a little football. I practiced yesterday. I had one of the coaches say, what's going on? I said, I'm just trying to get smart. He goes, well, aren't we all? I said, yep, I'm out here to try and get smart. That's what I'm out here to try and do.
Mick, I'm sure you've been asked this question more probably so in your professional career than any other, but I got to know because I've never really read up on it. Where did the oh my, your signature call, come from?
Well, I stole that from Dick Enberg. I went to school at Illinois State, middle of Illinois, and I had two mentors. One was about 27 years old. He was about 5-6 years older than me. And then I had another guy in his early 40s. Well, the younger guy was a talented guy, and he got a job out in Ventura, California. This is in the middle 70s. So he would send me cassette tapes of Dick Enberg calling the Los Angeles Rams on KMPC radio in Los Angeles. Dick was doing, remember the TV sports show, Sports Challenge? He was doing that. He wasn't necessarily a big-time network star yet, but he was a big star. I mean, he did the Houston-UCLA game for TBS from the Astrodome back in 1968. But, you know, he hadn't become the big star that they would soon be, although he was a big star. And he was using this, oh, my. I'm thinking, you know, my, nobody back here in the Midwest is using that. I mean, I can run with that. See, when I was a kid growing up in the Chicago area, we had a lot of great sportscasters, and I'd hear Jack Brickhouse do the Cubs, and every time the Cubs would hit a home run, he'd go, hey, home run, you know, and then I'd hear Harry Carey, and he'd go, you know, holy cow. And so if you look at the foul poles in Wrigley Field, one foul pole has the words, hey, and the other foul pole had the words, holy cow, because they both did Chicago Cubs games. So as I'm growing up, people said, you know, Mick, if you're going to be a sportscaster, you got to get a catchphrase. I said, I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Is that a prerequisite? You got to have something like that? Well, as it turned out, then I got older and I started doing this for a living. And then my buddy sends me these tapes. I'm going, that's it. Oh, my. I can use that. Now, the way I say it is a totally different way than when Dick said it, different spin on it. But, you know, it is what it is. It's not copyrighted. And, you know, Steve Spurrier went out to Reno, Nevada a few years ago, and it was playing one of those celebrity pro-am golf tournaments, and he ran into Dick Enberg out there. And Steve was talking to him, and he said, oh, by the way, you know, it's our guy back there. Our guy back there, he uses oh my, but he's quick to even credit for it. And Dick Enberg looked at Steve Spurrier, and he said, well, you tell your guy back there that I stole it from a guy back in the 1940s. So that's kind of what we do in radio, you know, in broadcast. We kind of steal from everybody. We take what fits our personality. And there are certain other phrases that other sportscasters use that I think sounds good for them, but it wouldn't work for me. It's not me. It's not my personality, but I don't mind you saying it. So the oh my works, and I've had fans tell me that, Mick, on such and such a play, you didn't say oh my. I said, well, you know what? That just didn't strike me as an oh my play. But if you're sitting there in the 40th row and you thought it was an oh my play, then give it an oh my. I don't own it, and you can. And I know there are some Gator fans that say, gee, you use oh my too much. I've heard you use oh my on 3rd and 2. I said, well, you know, if it's 3rd and 2 and it's a pivotal 3rd down in the game and we kept the drive alive, went and scored, then maybe it was worth even oh my. You know, it's kind of like what Dan Mullen's saying about Felipe Franks. Learn to check down. You know, a 3rd and 5 completion is pretty good sometimes. That may be the best throw you made all game. And just got to know when it strikes you. And so, you know, that's how it works. Some games I might have one or two, other games I might have eight or nine. I don't know. I don't count them. I don't care. It's just a natural thing, and it's an exciting thing, and I'm kind of wired that way, and that's the only way I know how to do it. You know, I've always defined myself as kind of a blue collar sportscaster. I'm not this guy that's, you know, that's real polished and all good looking and all that. You know, I gotta work. I'm kind of like the second baseman, you know, that had to kind of scratch and claw and learn things. And sometimes those guys become better coaches because they didn't have all the God given ability. And so, you know, I'm trying to take what God gave me and try and make it better. And so that's kind of the genesis of Oh My.
He is the voice of the Florida Gators, Mick Hubert. Mick, we appreciate you taking time to jump on with us. Have a great call. We know you will there at Camping World Stadium tomorrow in Orlando as the Gators take on Miami.
Guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate letting me be on with you today.
Hey, thanks for joining us. That is Mick Hubert, Big Mick there, the voice of the Gators. And ironically enough, he joins us on the Mick Ultra Pure Gold Hotline. Ultra Pure Gold, a great-tasting golden lager made with organic grains, fewer calories and carbs than Ultra, and a clean, balanced finish.
This is Three Man Front.